For providing the opportunity for me to come and speak. I always get really excited when I can talk about One Health and emerging infectious diseases. So I will be talking about one particular One Health approach to capacity building and tracking for zoonotic pathogen surveillance in global hotspot regions. I have no financial relationships with commercial interests to disclose. So when I begin to talk about emerging infectious diseases, I always like to provide just a basic definition, even though I'm sure we're all aware of it. But basically, there's two different types of infectious diseases that we're concerned about, those that are emerging and those that are re-emerging. So the definition is infections that have newly appeared in a population or have existed but are rapidly increasing in incidence or geographic range. So one example of a newly appeared disease would be the novel strain of the 2009 H1N1 pandemic. And then one that has existed for some time but is rapidly increasing in incidence would be like Ebola or like a comorbid infection with tuberculosis and HIV. So there's a lot of drivers or key factors in emergence that I'm sure many of you are aware of, but just to list a couple of those, we have increased globalization that can really lead as a driver to the emergence of infectious diseases, such as through rapid travel. I can be from here to Georgia in an hour. And then movement of goods and products, human demographics, a rapidly aging population, behavior as well, like recreational activities. Markets and trade, so the sale of bushmeat or wildlife trade transport as an example, war, conflict, migration of displaced persons, poverty, social inequality, lack of medical infrastructure or access as a driver, and the microbial adaptation and the rise of multi-drug-resistant organisms like MRSA or XDR or MDR-TB as well. Those are all different factors that can lead into the emergence of infectious diseases. So in order to understand these factors and really to get a great understanding from an ecological perspective, a social perspective, an economic perspective, there were a lot of researchers who started to look into these factors and how they play a role in emergence. And so there's one paper that kind of set the stage for all of this research, and I'm sure you're familiar with it. It was the Jones paper that came out in 2008 that looked at all the emerging infectious diseases from like 1940 to the early 2000s in order to identify characteristics associated with the infectious disease that diseases that emerged during that time. And what they noticed was that over 60% of emerging infectious diseases came from zoonotic sources, and of that 60%, about 70% came from wildlife origin. And so that really showed us that, oh, hey, you know, we really need to take a One Health approach in order to understand emerging infectious diseases. Additionally, One Health, I don't want to say started gaining traction because it's been a concept that's been around for a while now, but a lot of research initiatives, a lot of research programs were starting to come up to say, you know what, we're going to approach this from a One Health perspective in order to make the biggest difference. And I think especially, so my original training was from a public health perspective, but now instead of calling myself a public health professional, I say I'm a One Health professional. But I think there is an underestimation of like the dynamics between animals and humans and the environment in which it interacts. And so like these are just a few examples. I took a trip out to East Africa and Tanzania where there was a lot of different interactions between humans and animals, even just miles apart. So for example, on the top right-hand corner, you can see a cow right outside of Morogoro Market in Tanzania. And then there's like smaller live bird markets, larger live bird markets. You can see a slaughterhouse and a bird market outside of Dar es Salaam. So there's a lot of interaction going on, and that really put One Health to the forefront. So the One Health approach that I want to talk to you about is the USAID Emerging Pandemic Threats Program. Of it, there's one arm called the PREDICT Project. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about the PREDICT Project and what we do as a One Health approach to hopefully predicting and preventing the next pandemic. So our charge through the Emerging Pandemic Threats Program was really to identify high-risk pathogen transmission interfaces and increase the local capacity in geographic hotspots to recognize the emergence of potentially pandemic viruses from wildlife that could pose a major threat to human health. So that was a really big charge for us to do. And just so you know, the USAID, United States Agency for International Development, in its words, you can see why we would really focus on capacity building, really to address that sustainability issue in countries outside of the United States. So we do have four components of PREDICT. That's surveillance, pathogen discovery, risk determination, and capacity building. So those are our four areas of focus. We are active in 20 countries across the globe. We have activities in Latin America, East and Central Africa, as well as South Asia and Southeast Asia. And if you think back to that map model from the Jones paper, you can see that some of our areas do coincide with those geographic hotspot areas where we think and research has shown that disease emergence is most likely to occur. But these countries were also chosen because they were of special interest to USAID. Now, we are a consortium. The PREDICT Consortium is made up of five partners. So I am out of UC Davis, the One Health Institute. But we do work with Wildlife Conservation Society, EcoHealth Alliance, Metabiota, and the Smithsonian Institute as well. So it's a huge joint effort among many organizations. So I am a small part of that huge effort. I do look at capacity building. So I'm going to be talking about capacity building and capacity tracking, our efforts and priorities from a One Health perspective. Now, our aim was to evaluate the similarities and differences among the perspectives of public health professionals, animal health professionals, and PREDICT project scientists, so the professionals that work for us who are in country, regarding current priority animal-human interfaces, as well as examine the benefits of a One Health approach in improving infectious disease capacity. Why are we doing this? Because really, I mean, I don't think anyone will argue that understanding the stakeholders' perspective, especially the stakeholders in our local areas, is really important in capacity building and capacity tracking. So when I talk about capacity building methods, I do like to define infectious disease capacity as well. So infectious disease capacity is just the ability to detect and to respond to infectious disease threats at their origin before they have a chance to spread. And I think that's really important because, I mean, ideally the earlier you can detect it, the earlier you can respond to it, and you're more likely to prevent the outbreak in regions outside of where it originated. Now, there are difficulties in capacity building that arise due to many different constraints, financial constraints. So capacity building for emerging infectious diseases is really expensive, and not all countries have the ability to funnel money towards that direction. Political reasons, not all countries want to funnel money to that direction. Not all countries understand the role that wildlife play in emerging infectious diseases, and if there's that lack of awareness, then the ability or the wanting to spend money on it is smaller. And then, of course, environmental constraints. So in these global hotspot regions, the environmental conditions sometimes limit the ability, for example, to set up a cold chain, so to bring samples from the field into the lab in order to get, you know, good samples, good readings, just simply because of the environmental constraints there. Now, we do have four key areas of capacity building. Just to briefly tell you about the four areas, we focus on human resources. So human resources could involve the training or the education of in-country personnel. Laboratory resources could include protocol development, equipment acquisition. Surveillance and outbreak response just involves coordinating efforts in response to maybe a suspected case, or enhancing field sampling methods as well in non-outbreak scenarios, as well as risk communication, which is enhancing communication across sectors, across ministries, as well as getting the word out of the importance of wildlife in emerging infectious diseases, outside, you know, not including government officials, but also community or village members as well. So this all rests on the idea, the reason we go out and we do everything that we do is because any weakness in one part of a global surveillance network is really a gap through which a zoonosis can arise. So, for example, if there is a gap in one of these global hotspot areas where risk of disease emergence is most likely to occur, then that is ultimately going to be a weakness in the global surveillance network. So our capacity tracking method, so this was a five-year project. We like to describe it as iterative and adaptive process. So each year, our capacity tracking methods change in order to really conform to what our research questions were in that particular year, and to really understand what's needed on the ground. And we did use a key informant approach. That key informant approach always involved the head predict personnel in country, providing us the details, the characteristics of the capacity building process that's going on in the country. And then later on in the years, we started to look outside of the predict project in order to really get perspectives from wildlife officials, public health professionals, livestock professionals as well. So we did all of this through a rapid tool assessment. So we created a survey that was really based off of the OIE PBS tool, but we modified it in order to suit our needs and what we wanted to find out. And so I'm going to be focusing on just some year five findings that looked at key interfaces. So interfaces is just really that area of animal-human contact where disease transmission is likely to occur based upon information research from the past, as well as looking at core capacities that we did throughout the 5 years in the PREDICT project. And, of course, it's one thing to really talk about One Health, like, oh, we need to talk more with all the different sectors, but it's another thing to apply One Health. So we really wanted to know, how was One Health specifically applied in the country? So just some preliminary results. Here's the animal-human interfaces identified as important for zoonotic pathogen surveillance among all stakeholders. So we did have 19 PREDICT project scientists participate, 21 animal health professionals. Mainly they focused on wildlife or livestock, and they did come from the ministries of agriculture or forestry. It really depended on the country as far as what ministries and what the label was and how they classified themselves. And we had 11 public health professionals that mostly came from the ministries of health. So everybody pretty much agreed, the majority agreed, that areas where wildlife are hunted is really a key area that needs to be, a key interface that needs to be focused on, as well as peri-domestic exposure, so peri-domestic interfaces, so in or near human dwellings, so like maybe backyard poultry that are brought in at night. Wildlife trade transport was another key interface identified. Contact with park personnel, intensive wildlife management areas was a top one, zoos and large markets where there was greater than 20 vendors. Now, we have different ways of ranking interfaces, and this is not us saying that these are the important interfaces. We just want to know what other people think are the important interfaces, typically because that has a lot to do with their actions. So here's a global summary of the interfaces identified as important by at least 75% of the respondents from each sector. So if 75% of the public health professionals identified this interface as important, then I stuck it here and then tried to look at similarities. So animal health professionals really identified interfaces of public safety hazards and private wildlife collections, or those who keep animals as pets, as important. Public health said the markets, the slaughterhouse is really important, or areas where wildlife come in contact with tourists or ecotourism. And then some similarities between the PREDICT and animal health sectors are the zoos, and PREDICT and public health sanctuaries, park personnel, contact with researchers outside of the PREDICT project. Now, three areas that everybody agreed on across all sectors with at least 75% of the respondents was the hunted, the peri-domestic, and the wildlife trade transport. So that was really great to see those agreements. Now, again, it's one thing to say I think this area is important, but it's another thing to, like, have people there and actively surveying, you know, the sites. So I looked at the interfaces identified as active sites by at least 50% of the respondents for each sector. And so animal health professionals were more likely to be in an organization that looked at the wildlife trade transport just by virtue of its mission, probably. Public health was more likely to participate in public safety hazard interfaces. And then PREDICT really focused when differentiating between the other sectors on zoos, sanctuaries, contact with park personnel, contact with researchers outside of the PREDICT project, as well as wildlife that rated crops. So looking at the capacity building successes as reported by the project scientists, we really wanted to know across the 5 years, where did we make the most improvement in country? And so you can see that, so we had 19 countries respond, and the greatest improvement was seen in the trained field personnel, with 100% of the countries reporting that, yeah, the training of the people in country who are able to do field surveillance is definitely improved by the PREDICT project. This is followed by laboratory diagnostic protocols. So we did a lot of protocol development in order to do family level testing. And so that was a big improvement or success in our countries. And then wildlife field surveillance protocols as well were developed. And so you can see that the one kind of lowest on the totem pole here is the implementation of government programs and policies. It's something that's really hard to do, right, to implement government programs and policies. And so developing and putting into action something like a laboratory protocol is going to be not easy, but far easier than implementing government policy. So looking at our One Health successes, so this was kind of a qualitative approach, so an open-ended question that simply asked, you know, what are the ways that you applied One Health to particular areas of focus in your country. And so a lot, these kind of five themes came up. And there was a lot of overlap between the five themes, but I tried to distinguish them. And it was coordinated response efforts, improvement of local capacity, increased awareness regarding the importance of wildlife, increased intersectoral communication, and increased educational opportunities. So just to provide some examples, our project scientists in Tanzania, when looking at as an example for increased educational opportunities, stated there have been ongoing One Health trainings and courses at different institutions in country that link participants from different professional backgrounds. One example would be the master's degree program on One Health in molecular biology at Soekhoen University of Agriculture. And so this is just a picture that shows the Emerging Infectious Disease Molecular Laboratory at the university in Soekhoen. And basically, this was actually a really cool instance where the building was constructed out of those big shipping containers. And so the big shipping containers that you see moving products from one shore to the next. And so that was actually a really high-functioning molecular laboratory now at the university. Looking at coordinated response efforts, the project scientists from Cameroon said there were new posts created in ministries, so that was really great, and a prompt reaction of the Ministry of Health upon notification of suspect monkeypox cases, which included a call to different ministries for a coordination meeting and into the field shortly afterwards. So that communication, that coordination, is something that's always desirable. So here you can see PREDICT providing training to government technicians to strengthen capacity for wildlife disease, wildlife pathogen surveillance. Looking at the improvement of local capacity for wildlife disease surveillance was improved through the implementation of training and introduction of PREDICT field protocols. Now the National Reference Laboratory implements pathogen screening on wildlife samples to detect zoonotic viruses and is sharing archived and newly collected samples with PREDICT for expanded pathogen testing during outbreak response. So here you can see PREDICT team members collecting samples at a market where wild animals are sold as pets and for food. Increased awareness regarding the importance of wildlife, and I think this is really an important one because, again, not everybody really understands the importance of wildlife in the emergence. So One Health concepts have improved the knowledge of emerging pathogen threats, highlighting which spillovers of infectious diseases can occur from animals to humans. In the lab, numerous diagnoses of zoonoses, especially from human and animal samples, can be performed just simply by providing equipment, reagents, and other consumables. And so this came from our project scientists in Gabon. So here you can see where Predict conducted a field mission in a remote village during a national surveillance effort to provide communities with education on infectious disease risks. So we had a lot of different settings, a lot of different environments that we worked in. Increased intersectoral communication. So quarterly meetings between human health, livestock health, wildlife health have led to increased sharing of knowledge and collaboration on lab capacity building and surveillance activities. And this came from our project scientists in Laos. And here you can see bats for sale at a market in Central Laos and Predict staff training provincial government staff in wildlife sampling techniques. So just in conclusion, Predict really provided a unique opportunity to explore capacity building conditions. So there's a lot of research that talks about, you know, why we should do capacity building, but not a lot of research that really goes into like evidence-based and like methodological approaches. And so it was really great to see the capacity building and capacity tracking research that came out of wildlife pathogen surveillance. Particularly, information obtained through the rapid tool surveys contributed to the growing knowledge concerning successful capacity building practices. And through the utilization of key informants and other stakeholders, we were able to identify and prioritize research activities. So a truly One Health approach that improves zoonotic pathogen surveillance on a global scale is greatly needed. And through all of our different research activities, this really came to some concluding points. We need to have a greater awareness of the role of wildlife in human disease emergence. We also need to recognize high-priority human-animal interfaces across sectors, and we need to increase the number of active sites for zoonotic pathogen surveillance. So I am from the Predict team out of UC Davis, and Jonna Mazet is our leader, and I work with a great group, and we also work closely, again, with our partners in the Predict Consortium, and there is my contact information. Thank you.